This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Oh my gosh, it's a gorgeous day at my house. I am really good. How are you?
I'm well as well. Now, I got to tell you, it's what, about 1 degree, 2 degrees here in Toronto? What is it there in Prince Edward County?
2 degrees, but going up rapidly. It was below zero a mere hour ago.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to get up to about 8 today, which is exciting. Yeah. 10 tomorrow. Beautiful.
Crystal blue skies, a little bit of wind, not too much wind. Oh, yeah. And the birds are flocking from everywhere. Just it's a beautiful time of year and day.
Indeed. Gail and I were walking around our garden just the other day and noticing all the things that are popping up, including all of my allium that we got a couple of years ago, which are all popping up everywhere. It's very exciting. I love this time of year.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And like, I'm at the point where I've got a lot of things popping. I don't have a lot of color, but excuse me, I did go out and do a little bit of pruning this week. Plants that, you know, shrubs that are, it's appropriate to prune in the spring. Mm-hmm. Remember, we prune in the spring the shrubs that bloomed last fall.
Yeah.
So things like hydrangeas, as an example. And what else? Oh, yeah, some spiraea. I was pruning those and cleaning up some of the perennials.
Okie dokie. You know what I'm going to do? I don't know if you have any announcements. I want to give out the phone number.
You do your job there, and then
I'll do that, and then I'll hand it back to you.
Mine.
Yeah, because we would love for you to give us a call with any gardening question, indoor gardening question, outdoor, anything related. 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario on this beautiful spring morning, Easter weekend, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Ashley know if you're a first-time caller, because then I will give you the garden wings. And we want you to call often, call early. And please, this is an important one, one question per call, please. Last week, I had to cut somebody off because they tried to go into two-question land. And I'll do it again if I have to. Okay.
I'm still losing sleep about that, I bet.
Over to you. What do you got?
Couple of things. So mark your calendars. Remember the documentary series I hosted? I'm saying past tense, but we haven't made any new episodes, but there are 15 episodes of Healing Gardens re-airing starting this Monday night. That is April the 1st. No fooling around. Yeah. 9:30 p.m. Vision TV, starting season one, episode one, the Gary Tebow episode.
Right. And you traveled all over the world those episodes, right? Different continents and everywhere.
Yeah, and if there hadn't been a pandemic, we would have done even more travel. But initially, just the timing, we ended up in Canada and the Toronto area quite a bit because of travel restrictions. However, we did some very exotic travel, and it was so much fun. And I would do anything to keep doing it again. So Moses, if you're listening, let's do more episodes.
Sounds good to me.
So one quick announcement for the Agent Court Garden Club. They have a meeting coming up on Monday, April the 8th. So that's not this Monday, the following, 7:30 p.m. It's an in-person meeting with the club. They're a pretty fun group, and they sure love to get everybody out. So if you're in the area of Agent Court, it's the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd in the Toronto area. The topic that evening is the Gardens of Giverny, which is going to be quite beautiful.
Fabulous. Okay. Listen, give us a call. Lines are open. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show. Exciting time of the year, everything popping up. And we're going to go to our first caller, Charlie, who's from your neck of the woods. Yeah, we're going to Judy, who lives in Brighton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Morning.
I have a lawn issue. So I have some kind of grass. I'm not sure what it is. It like lays flat and then it knuckles out like a octopus, and everywhere the little elbow hits, it grows roots and then more come up, and it's seeding itself all over my lawn. I was using corn gluten twice a year and kind of got it under control, but then to be quite honest with you, I can't afford to keep doing that. We have an acre and a half and I can't. Mm. So I've heard you mention clover. Would that be an option?
Well, the great thing about clover is that it grows quickly. It's very tough, and it will outcompete any other grass in your lawn. That's why so many people don't like it and want to get rid of it. But that's what great idea. I mean, clover seeds are not inexpensive. You'll need to go. You may find it's just white clover, usually, you know, Dutch number one white clover, and that you'll buy a tiny package with a quadrillion seeds in the package for like, you know, $40. Like, it's kind of amazing how much it costs. But if you can get that broadcast, obviously you need to get out onto your lawn. This is the time of year for everybody with any kind of a lawn to get out there with your fan rake, rake out the dead stuff. In your case, if you can do some pulling, because it's soft, everything's soft right now, and weeds come out quite easily at this point, and the roots are not deep on that highly invasive grass whose name escapes me right now, that you're fighting with. So if you can get some of that out of there, that would be great. And then you will not be using corn gluten this spring if you're putting clover down now. And you get that broadcast onto those open areas, those patches, light raking, maybe a little top dressing, depending on whether you have sufficient soil. Most of us don't. So chances are you should be top dressing with some quality topsoil, light raking. And then obviously spring will bring some rain and the clover seeds should germinate and fill in quite nicely. This is a clover is excellent because it stays green year round. It has very deep taproot, doesn't need to be watered, you know, withstands the droughts that you probably are as familiar with as I am in this neck of the woods. And you don't have to worry about fertilizing any of that stuff. It just gives you a nice green palette.
Do you still have to cut it? Like, how tall does it get?
No. If you don't cut it, it can get up to knee height. Sometimes people do leave it just as a kind of a wild looking, because it does end up looking quite wild, field with lots of flowers and obviously lots of pollinators. Clover is very, very effective to support pollinators. So you can just leave it. But if you have an acre and a half, you probably have some lawn grasses that are surviving. So cutting is fine. You know, running your lawnmower, all of it keeps, like, obviously 3 inches high minimum, maybe 3.5 inches high. Just do your regular cutting thing once the clover is growing and established. So that'll be, you know, quite a ways from now. But don't use the corn gluten because that will stop the clover seeds from germinating.
Yes. Did you say knee high?
Yes, it can get as high as your knees, yeah.
Okay, so then, it has to be cut. I can't be looking like I'm living in a field.
We have some clover in our lawn, and we just cut it like the regular grass. And so it sits a little lower most of the time. Just looks green, and as you say, the bees love it. They're all around it. They love it.
Yeah, more than bees. Lots of, like, little tiny insects, too. Mm. Clover's perfect for supporting pollinators, and that's one of our jobs as gardeners.
Is it durable? Like, I have four dogs, and of course, I walk around a lot. So it's durable. I don't have to do anything special with it. It'll just look after itself.
It's more durable than your turf grasses.
Oh, and I don't have to fertilize.
Nope. Okay. No. Once it's established, it's good. That's one of the things about clover. It's a member of the legume family. So it is able to actually take nitrogen out of the air and provide it to itself to support growth. So, but again, it comes back to your soil. Make sure you've got a quality soil, because nothing's going to thrive if you've got thin, dead, poor soil.
No kiddo. Thanks for the question there, Judy. Got to run. Yeah, thanks for the call.
Bye.
And good luck with the lawn. We are going to go to a break in a second, but I'm going to give the numbers out again. 416-360-0740 is the Toronto number. Outside Toronto, anywhere in Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show. Going to go right to our next caller. We have Lauren on the line from Toronto, and Lauren is a first-time caller. Welcome to The Garden Show, Lauren. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
I got to give you, there you go, your garden wings. There you are, my dear.
Welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you. What I'd like to ask, is there any truth to the belief that coffee grounds are like the dregs of leftover coffee, black coffee? If they're poured around the base of the rose bush, that it'll actually benefit the rose bush by adding some nutrients or something. I don't know what the nutrients are in coffee.
There are benefits to coffee grounds, yes. Any plant will receive benefit from coffee grounds, but not when you first put them out there. The benefit is when the coffee grounds break down by insects and microorganisms. They release some of there's simple organic, obviously, matter in coffee grounds, but there's also some minerals. There's all kinds of little micronutrients in coffee grounds. If you want to put coffee grounds around your roses, you can do that, but do not pile them up like 2 inches deep around the roses. Scatter them throughout the garden if you want. I personally put my coffee grounds in with all my banana peels and eggshells and compost things all together. And then once everything's broken down, then I put it around my roses.
Oh, okay. All right. That's great. I'm glad to hear that it does something. I wasn't sure if it was just an old wives' tale.
No, you'll see. It'll make it. It's a funny story, but I had a client once. She used to put her banana peel around her base of a rose every single morning, a banana peel. And her roses grew to the height of a two-story building. It's nuts.
But that's amazing.
Good organic material.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's great. Thanks for telling me.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call there. And don't be a stranger.
Have a good day.
You as well. A banana peel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Like every day. Imagine the stack of banana peels she had at the bottom of her rose bushes.
Yeah, I know, but the flowers were 20 feet up.
My goodness.
Like, who can cut a rose or smell a rose that's 20 feet above ground?
Yeah, well, true enough, yeah.
She thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was a bit odd.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that you have to be careful that you don't slip every time you walk by that rose bush.
Yeah, like in a comic book, yeah. Yeah,
we're going to go to our next caller. We have another Toronto caller. We have Catherine on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Catherine.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well.
Morning.
My question is about hydrangeas. I'd like to know what to apply to keep the blue hydrangeas blue, the pink hydrangeas pink, and when do I apply it?
Good question. All right, so... I'm going to start with one quick question. You have hydrangeas now, I assume, and when they arrived in your house, they were pink and or blue, and now they're out in the garden. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. So you're in Toronto.
They were always garden plants. They weren't house plants.
Right. Good. So what I would do first off is I would get a hold of a pH testing kit.
I'm sorry, your line's cutting out. I don't.
Okay, so tell you what, hang up your phone and turn up your radio. And
okay.
I'll give you a second to do that. And while she's turning up the radio and turning off the phone and
Charlie,
getting
yeah,
a pencil,
I, this is sort of
paper.
it's a chemistry lesson, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it kind of? Yeah.
That's why I think Catherine should write this down. So
yeah.
pH tester or pH testing kit. Very simple. You can buy like a little probe that you stick in the soil, and it'll tell you roughly your pH. And, you know, Catherine has probably got a pH that's very neutral. Neutral is 7.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the 0 is acidic. And towards the 14, which is the entire scale, is considered an alkali soil. She's likely very much in the middle at a 7. Her pink roses will not, sorry, pink hydrangeas will naturally be pink in her neutral soil. They are very happy in Toronto soil, Ontario soil, and tend to be pink. However, you want to go blue or more likely mauve, right? So you'll get shades of blue mixed in with your pink and you'll end up with mauve. You will have to lower your pH. So how around those plants? So how will you lower it? Well, you can get a hold of some pine needles because pine needles are all over the ground this time of year and put those around your hydrangeas. You can also go to the store and buy sulfur-based products. So you can get aluminum sulfate. I think that's still available. Never use that on edible foods, but you can use it on hydrangeas. Or you can get a hold of soil acidifier. Any of these are going to be sulfur-based. You're going to follow the instructions and sprinkle this product around on the soil in the spring around the hydrangeas that you want to turn to a more blue shade. Again, you've got your pH tester. Mm-hmm. Once you've done that and it's rained, you're going to keep testing your pH probably every day, every second day. You cannot control the pH permanently, but you can certainly do it temporarily, and you will see a different color to your hydrangeas if you do that.
Wow. Is there any other flower that you can think of outside, offhand, that you can manipulate the color like that?
Actually, probably just about every flower out there can be manipulated really? To some extent, but not as obviously as hydrangea. Right. But remember, I mean, people are like, what is pH? The thing about pH is that when we try and manipulate the pH of our soil, we really are affecting the chemistry of the soil. And the chemistry of the soil is what allows nutrients to be absorbed by plants. It's the availability of those nutrients that is controlled by pH. So manipulating our pH isn't always a great idea, and yet we know blueberries aren't going to grow in a pH of 7. You need to drop it down. You need a 6.4, 6.5 to grow blueberries. Hydrangeas love it a little bit acidic. Magnolias love it a bit acidic. So there's certain plants that will grow better in a slightly acidic soil, but you'll never get your soil down. You get it down to zero and now you're at, you know, acid that'll burn your skin off. So it's just impossible to do.
Right.
But you can certainly fool around and put on your little white lab coat and go out there with your clipboard and start tracking the pH of your soil with a test kit.
Sweet. Love it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Bill on the line who is calling from Pickering. Welcome to the Garden Show, Bill.
Good morning to both of you.
Yeah, you as well.
Yeah, it's super. I've got some geraniums that I've put in cardboard boxes. I guess I've got 10 or 15 of them. They've been to dry and dark. I've sprayed them lightly with water a couple times over the winter. I'd like to know what's the best way of bringing them back and how much should I cut them back?
Right. So when you put them in the boxes, you shook all the soil off the roots, I assume?
Yes. Yes. And they're okay. Just kind of dried up looking things right now.
I bet. Well, okay, so were they in a cool location all winter?
Or yes.
Regular? Okay,
well,
so cool is good.
Our basement is
so they
dry
might still
and warm.
Be alive. Sorry, what was that?
Our basement is dry and reasonably warm. Like, you know, you need a sweater if you were going to be down there a long time, but it's, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Livable.
So the idea of keeping geraniums as you have with no soil in a semi-dormant state over the winter does go back to the days of the basements that were cool and dark and usually even had a soil floor so that there was a certain level of moisture. And, you know, people would keep their rutabagas, their potatoes, everything. There would be sand and yeah. It would be called a root cellar for a reason because the root vegetables would be dug into the ground and the geraniums would also survive over the winter. Soon as the days start to get a bit longer, the geraniums start to wake up and they will start to send out little green shoots. So what you probably need to do at this point, assuming they're not dead, I mean, they could be dead, they've just dried up too much, but I'd get them upstairs into the light. I would get them out of the boxes. I would spritz them, maybe even just lay them out on some moist newspaper, just something to get some moisture around them, and then see what happens. You should start to see some, if there's life in them, some little green tips should emerge from the shoots, and those little tips are going to be your cuttings. Those are going to be your new geraniums. The mother geraniums you have right now are probably not worth trying to plant unless they look really good. Then, yeah, you just put them back into pots of soil, roots obviously under the ground, and into some sunshine, and some, give them a little bit of water, and they will start to wake up. And again, you will get new growth, which you will take as cuttings.
Okay. On a warm day like today outside?
No, not warm enough. Keep them in room temperature. If you really want to wake them up and get them going, you need the 20 degrees we have inside. Wait until you're okay, frost-free before you really go outside, which is, you know, another month or more from now. But just to get things going, to you know, even some of the seeds we're starting in our homes right now are taking, as you said, cuttings of things. We need those room temperatures, that 20-ish degrees to really get things growing.
Okay, always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Yes, thanks very much for calling.
Call.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, we're going to go. The lines are like so full today, so we're going to go right to our next caller. We've got Sue on the line. She's calling from Grimsby. Sue, you are a first-time caller. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, well, there you go. There are your garden wings. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, what have you got for Charlie there?
I've got an older garden, and I've got two shrubs in there that I think are tree peonies, which I've never worked with before. And I wonder, can you cut them back and or transplant them?
Okay, good question. I'm glad you asked it. Do not transplant.
Okay.
They're really hard to transplant. I mean, it's possible, but I wouldn't, particularly if they're old. They do not like to be disturbed. I saw a tree peony survive transplanting, but it was transplanted with a large machine. So it moved, it had a very nice big root ball that went with it. So I would never recommend transplanting if you don't have to. But tree peonies want lots of sun, so full sun. Pruning, yes, go in there. Again, it might be a little moist to be out in the garden on a day like today, but when you can get out and start walking around in your garden with your sharp pruners, cut out anything dead. And it's very obvious what's dead on a tree peony. It's very gray, dark gray, might even be black. You're going to trim out all the dead stuff. You will see the buds that are ready to grow. They're fat and red. Then you just kind of look at it and say, okay, you know, you can prune. Usually we don't prune a ton just because they're very slow growing plants, and they're very beautiful, unusual plants. And the flowers, when they get going, are, you know, just knock your socks off. They're so big and so, you know, they're just so beautiful. So, I wouldn't do a lot of pruning unless for some reason it's really a problem, like the plant is over the walkway or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's just that they're high. They're about 36 inches high, and all the buds are starting to come out already. So
they won't get much higher than that. That's kind of the full size of a tree peony, about 3 feet by 3 feet or meter by a meter. That is it's not going to get 5 feet tall or anything. That just doesn't happen. What you'll see is from where it is now, the top of the plant will be covered in bloom. So I would be inclined to let it, particularly if you're new in this garden and you've just sort of inherited this stuff, I'd watch it this year. And I think you'll find that the final height is about what it is right now.
Okay, that sounds great then. Will do.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks, Sue. Okay, we're going to go right to our next caller. We've got Marcia.
But wait, Dean.
Oh, wait, go ahead. Yes, sorry. Go ahead.
For one second. I have a tree outside my studio window in my home office. It is full of goldfinches right now. Like, I can't even count them. There's so many.
Really?
And how do I know they're goldfinches? They're starting to turn gold.
They are. Yes, we have them at home. Yeah. They're like an olivey color in the winter. But I can see them. They're turning more. They're yellower and yellower every day. It's very exciting.
I know. And I've got, like, so many of them out there. It's pretty cool. Like, there was a blue jay. I do have a feeder close by. There was a blue jay earlier, but now the finches are filling this tree. It's very cool.
So you need to take a picture of that later, and you need to send it to me so I can see it. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I will do that.
Got it. Okay. Let's go to Toronto. Yeah, we have Marcia on the line. She's calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Marcia.
Oh, great. Thank you. Good morning. I'm just wondering, Charlie, are you ever a vendor at one of the farmers markets in Prince Edward County?
No. I have nothing to sell at the markets.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my question.
You're very welcome.
I got to say, that's the other thing that is exciting about this time of year, because come, I guess, May is when a lot of the farmers markets start. And I love the farmers markets.
Okay, so if a farmers market is starting in May, it's starting with product from, I guess, Niagara. There's nothing being harvested in May.
No, here. But I'm just saying, most farmers markets, I know I'm in Collingwood area, I think they start around the May 2-4 weekend. And not all of them are selling produce necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are selling baked goods, honey, and honeys and jams. Things like that. Yes, indeed.
True. Yeah.
Yep. And then as it ramps up, then you get more and more of the produce.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's true. They're pretty fun. I don't know. That's a great question, Marcia, but anything I'm growing is just for home use. And no, I'm not starting up a jam factory, though. We went for a very, very beautiful walk last weekend, and we were sort of deep in the woods, and my friend looked at me and she said, "So for when you start up your wreath making business, this will be a great spot because it's all wild grapevines, eh?"
Yeah.
It's just like masses of grapevines and red osier dogwood, you know, with the red bark.
Oh yeah.
A wall of dogwood in amongst all these grapevines, and it's all just, you know, public land basically. And she's like, "Well, for when you start up your wreath making business, you're going to want to come here and do some harvesting."
Nice. Well,
and
I was like, you know what I would not- do? What I would do? I would, you know, remember Lucy from the Peanuts? You know,
yeah.
I would make a booth like that for you, just as the doctor is in, and so people could just come up and ask you questions.
Sweet, good idea. I like it. I'll just do it at the end of my driveway.
Yeah, just sell your pointed opinion. There you go. I love it. Okay, you know what we're going to do? We're really close to break time, so we'll take a break now. We'll come back with much more of The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show, and we're going to go right to our next caller. We have Wanda on the line from Cannington, and she is a first-time caller. Is that right, Wanda?
Yes, it is.
Okay, there you go. Thank you for being a first-time caller. What do you got for Charlie?
Yes, I grow a few vegetables. I'm just on a lot in town. We had our house built in 97, and I planted along the garage. We put tons of compost, and at the back fence, it was just good black earth. And my gardens were great, and about the last 3 or 4 years, everything I plant just mildews, goes yellow, and dies.
Right.
My beans, tomatoes, beans, cucumbers. Like last year, my cucumbers had a million. They looked great. They grew tall. I put them in a big pot. I thought, well, I won't put them in the garden. I put them in a big pot, put tomato trellises up. They had hundreds of flowers, and then all of a sudden, everything started to shrivel, and that was it.
Right. Okay, so there's probably a few different things happening there. Cucumbers are famous for getting what would be called a blight, which comes from an insect that spreads the blight. And you're right, the plants collapse very quickly when that happens. And there's not a lot you can do except, if you've ever heard of a floating row cover, so that's like a white gauze, like a cheesecloth, that you would, if you've got cucumbers in a pot, you've got tomato cage in the middle for the cucumbers to climb up, you would actually drape this gauze over top of the whole mess. And you would do that, I mean, the timing is everything, because cucumbers need insects to be pollinated to give you fruit. But on the other hand, you want to protect them from insects that are going to come and start spreading diseases all over the place. So timing is everything. So that's something that people will often do. Once the cucumbers are set, the little tiny, tiny cucumbers are just starting to grow, you drape and grab that harvest if you can. When it comes to that in-ground area where you did have success and you're not having as much now, a couple of things I'm going to suggest. Is it possible that it's a lot shadier now than it used to be along the side of your garage from, say, a tree growing or a neighbor built a McMansion next door? Has that changed?
It's on a south wall, so it gets lots of sun.
Lots of sun. So sun is not your issue. Is it possible that a lack of rotating of crops means that you've just, you know, you kept planting tomatoes in the same spot for 5 or 10 years and now the tomatoes aren't doing as well?
Well, actually, last year I planted my tomatoes at the neighbor's, and it was virgin soil, and they all gnarled and died, and I put a zucchini plant back there. It all gnarled and died. I just don't know what's happening. It's just like everything in the garden that I'm planting in this area, like in my area, is not doing well.
Okay, so that does sound a bit odd, because last year was a very good growing year. We had lots of heat. We had sufficient rain. It's these areas are not under automatic irrigation, are they?
No. I just take a watering can and I'll water them, you know, to keep them, because the compost soil doesn't really hold its water.
Right. Well, and depending on where the compost came from. So be careful when you're buying or picking up compost that's free. Just compost is very light, as you indicate. It's composed of decomposed organic material. So we always mix compost with our existing topsoil. It's never straight compost when we plant. So let's be sure that we've got a nice mix going on. If in doubt, test your soil, because you shouldn't have had the issues. If you're in full sun and you're watering, you know, carefully with a watering can, I would look to the soil for your experience from last summer.
Okay, and what should the pH be approximately?
Very close to a neutral. Most of our vegetables, most of all of what we grow, 6.7, 6.8, so very close to neutral.
Right, 6.8.
And soil testing is available through the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food, and Rural Affairs. So that's where you send in a soil sample to an accredited soil testing lab. That is, you will get probably more information back than you want, and it'll cost you maybe more than you want to spend, you know, $75, something like that. Or you can just get a little kit at Canadian Tire or any garden center, and you can do some at-home soil testing just for the basics, for phosphorus, potassium, nitrogen, which is always fleeting at the best of times. When we're testing nitrogen, that's how much nitrogen is there at that moment, but 10 minutes later, that changes. So never trust your nitrogen numbers. But yeah, you can easily test at home for things like pH, potassium, and phosphorus availability.
Okay, Wanda, have to run. We have some other callers on the line. I just want to mention also, if you have anything that would be better described by a picture, you can send it to c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. But what don't you want to send a message via? Here's your chance. I've opened the door, Charlie. There you go.
Thank you, Dean. Yes, I just like to remind listeners, I love getting your emails, but ensure that when you send an email to my email address, you are in email mode yourself. If you send me to my email address a text message, it comes to me with a phone number and I cannot reply to it. So email and texting is not the same. So email me only. I'm not available for texting other than with my best buddies like Dean. I am available by email. So c.dobbin@mzmedia.com from your email address.
Okay, let's go to Helen now. Helen's calling from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show, Helen.
Good morning, good morning. It's a beautiful day in Etobicoke, too.
Nice.
Hello.
Hi, we're here. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to mention I have some hollyhocks seeds, and they're black, it says on the package. I already put them into the ground in a kind of a northwest location. How do you think they'll do? I planted them maybe 2 or 3 days ago.
Okay, so tell me you just scattered them on the surface of an open space where there's soil and lots of sun.
Yeah, but in the afternoon it'll be lots of sun. Right now it's just a little shady because of its location. And I haven't really watered too much.
Yeah, there is rain in the forecast in the next couple of days. I know there's no rain today. I would get out my watering can if you haven't watered. Water them at least once. But with hollyhock seeds, pretend you're Mother Nature. Pretend that you're doing what nature does. So in the garden, hollyhocks bloom in the summer, produce fruit and seeds towards the mid to late summer, and they scatter on the surface of the soil.
Oh.
Those seeds sometimes will grow in September, October in our gardens, little green, fluffy bits of leaves. And if they do that in the fall, then the following year, they'll grow again with flowers, because hollyhocks take 2 years before they bloom. So the first year is green leaves only. And if you have done that scattering and you're pretending you're Mother Nature, then go out there and do a little rainstorm. And if we don't get rain, do that. Just keep them moist, not wet. And the sunnier the location, the better when it comes to flowers and hollyhocks.
Yeah, yeah. So this year I'm not going to expect any flowers then. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so don't be surprised if you get little, they're called rosettes of green leaves, very specific looking leaf, like you'll recognize the leaf, and let them grow, and then next year you'll get flowers.
Wonderful. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, thanks very much for the call there, Helen. Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show, and just like the time of year when things are popping up everywhere, my goodness, we are just covered with callers. And first-time callers, too. We have another one on the line. We have Heather from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Heather. How are you?
I'm great, thank you very much.
Good. I'm just going to give you your garden wings. There you go. Thanks for being a first-time caller.
Yes, thank you. I have an old jade plant. It's in a pot, approximately 15 inches. It's a very heavy, huge pot, 15 inches tall, 15 inches wide. It sits in a bay window facing northwest, and it's quite an old jade plant. And it's developed a black mold on the leaves. And the only treatment I have done is spraying it with a bit of water and baking soda, and then wiping each leaf, and then actually, like all the healthy ones, and removing the ones that have this mold. And I'm wondering if there's anything else I can do for it.
Okay, so I would wonder why that mold even arrived, if the plant is that old. So something changed.
I'm not sure what has changed. It's been there for a long, long time. I've actually taken cuttings from it, healthy cuttings, and repotted those healthy cuttings, and the same thing has happened. To the new cuttings, yes. Huh. So I'm at a bit of a loss, actually. I was thinking maybe to change the soil, but it's a very, very huge pot.
Big old plant, yeah, really.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, okay, so you know what? I'm going to need to look into this, because that's odd. If you took cuttings and the same thing happened, that does say something. For now, don't water it, obviously. Nothing changed in your watering?
No, I water it every 2 weeks.
Okay. If you want to do something, I think the spraying idea is not a bad one. There are fungicides that are in packages that are like in spray bottles that are sulfur based. So you would read and follow the instructions very clearly. Of course, as you know, you can mix that 1 tablespoon baking soda with 1/2 teaspoon soap and spray with 1 gallon of water all mixed together. Let it drip dry. I would not water the plant whatsoever. I would get a moisture meter, because it's that big pot and it's really hard to know what's going on down deep in the soil. A moisture meter's got the probe. Find out what's going on down deep. This time of year, you would typically water more than in November, because in November, the plant was hunkering down for a sleep. This time of year, the plant is kind of all perked up because it's spring. So for now, just hold off on the watering. Double check your moisture inside the plant. If you want to treat with a fungicide, go for it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can find out anything more, because cuttings should be fine, particularly if you go into a south window as opposed to that northern window. They should grow some roots and be just fine. You should not see that mold unless there's something going on internally in the plant.
Okay, and we'll have an update maybe next week on the show.
Yeah,
okay,
beginning of the show next week.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Great. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Bye bye.
Okay, going to go right to John. John in Mississauga. Welcome to the Garden Show, John.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlie.
Hey.
I want to make a comment regarding the banana peel.
Yeah.
If I may. I've been doing this, Charlie, for years, to be honest with you. I saved the banana peel all winter, and then I put it in the oven, and once it's real, I'll put it in a blender, make it, you know, like a powder. And I put it near the flower pots and all that.
Wow!
What do you think about that?
That's a bit of work, but I bet you that also the plants love it, right?
Oh, I'm telling you, Charlie, my roses are—I have what, maybe around eight plants of roses and bushes, and they are, you know, I just want to see if maybe people will do the same. I know, sir, my wife doesn't like it because when we put it in the oven for maybe an hour, right, it smells. But once I put it in powder, and like I said, I put that on the thing. I mean, I don't put sort of like the peel. I just, like I said, I let it. So what do you think? Do you think it's great?
I think it's brilliant, but it's a lot of work. And not to mention you're filling your freezer up with banana peels all winter. Yeah. I bet your wife doesn't like that either.
I live it in the garage.
Wow.
Oh, the garage.
Good for you. John, if I did that, I think I'd get myself a divorce. I think is what I would get.
No, he grows a great garden. I don't think anybody's divorcing him.
I just celebrated my 60th anniversary last year.
Nice.
Oh. I mean, actually, in June. So far she's put up with me.
So far, so good.
And
your smelly bananas.
Anyway.
Thanks for sharing, John.
Thanks for listening to me, and happy Easter to both of you, and take care.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, this is what
Happy
we're going to do. We're going to jump to our last. Yeah, we got last caller, but we're just going to see if Elizabeth can ask the question and then we can answer it maybe next week. Okay, what do you got there for us, Elizabeth?
Well, I was wondering about buying a compost accelerator. My compost just doesn't seem to be working very well. And many years ago, I bought some. I went to Sheridan Nursery, and they don't carry it. And I wondered if you knew where I could buy it. It comes in a box in the sort of a grainy stuff that I used to sprinkle on the compost.
All right. Good question. I'm going to answer this very quickly, and thanks for calling.
Yep,
the answer to the question is you can buy compost accelerator at Canadian Tire, Rona, whatever, in a box. It'll be enzymes. It will sort of speed things up, but if you really want to get your compost working and perking along, get yourself some red worms. Red worms, they are magical. They are magic in a box, and they're alive. Yeah, you can get them shipped to you from a company called Kathy's Crawlers. Kathy with a C, Crawlers. I bought some last year, and they've come through the winter beautifully, and I was down chatting with my worms the other day, and they're amazingly happy and breeding like crazy. So that's what I would do. Thanks, everybody. Happy, happy Easter. Thanks, Dean.
You too. Thanks, Charlie.
Ashi. Yeah. Have a great weekend. See you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.